art, comedy, pop culture, and much more. You're listening to ACPN.
Okay, here we go.
We can hijack your brain.
Okay, here we go.
It's me?
It is you.
No, I start this one. All right, well, that's fine. Welcome, everybody. It's time for Something in Review.
In Review.
I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob. You threw me with that one.
It's because you have the end. I thought I just got the mainline episodes.
So the end and the wheel are the ones I start. Everything else, you start.
Fair enough. Anyway, this is the show where we talk about things that we've watched that we want to discuss. This week, we have decided to break format like we continue to do for 2021 and will continue to do throughout. Rob, why don't you explain what's going on tonight?
So on this episode of In Review, as James said, we're kind of doing a double header here. James is going to be giving his review of Cobra Kai, and I will be giving my review of Netflix's Evil.
This is an attempt because you had said, hey, why don't you watch Evil? And I was like, I just haven't gotten to it. And I was like, hey, Rob, why are you watching Cobra Kai? And you're like, I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, no, you and everybody else has said, oh, yeah, you need to watch Cobra Kai. And it's not that I haven't gotten to it. It's I legit got three episodes in and then had to tap out. We'll get into it. I don't want to pre-review the review.
But before we get to our reviews, we would like to mention that we have some friends who are doing something badass.
Yes, Quixotic Games, yep.
They are running a Kickstarter campaign for their two new games, Core Worlds Empires, which is the epic standalone sequel to their original Core Worlds card game that was released 10 years ago, and Core Worlds Nemesis, the solo expansion to the original Core Worlds card game.
Now, I've played Core Worlds. It's a deck building game, which became very popular in the gaming industry. It's one of the best deck building games that I've played. And I'm not just saying that because I know the guy who worked on it. Like, mm-hmm. I've played a bunch of deck building games. I played the DC comic one. I played the Marvel one. I played this one. I played a bunch of them. It is an amazingly well-balanced game. There are multiple win paths, multiple victory paths. So it's like they put a lot of thought into this. This is a guy, Andy Parks, who designed this game. He is a board and card gamer himself. So he has years of experience going, wow, I really like this thing, but this one thing I don't like, or if they had just cleaned this up. So he kind of went into this whole Quixotic Games trying to build the kind of games that he would love to play over and over and over again himself. He just said, well, I'm just going to do it myself. So, yes, Core Worlds came out 10 years ago. Empire and Nemesis, the Kickstarter started today, and it runs through until February 25th. The add-ons will include cheap bundles for the original game, the expansions, the Dungeon Alliance series of games, which they also published. Go to quixotic.com, QUIXOTIC games.com, and there's a link for their Kickstarter. It started at noon this afternoon, and they are almost halfway to their goal from noon until now. So 8 hours, and they're almost halfway to their goal with 22 days to go. Definitely go check it out. Back the product. They will be sponsoring and supporting us this month, so you'll be hearing a lot about them on our episodes, but definitely go check them out.
Yes, I remember fondly you and I played. You showed me the games over at Wild Pig. I miss Wild Pig.
Yes.
And I am not a deck building guy. It was super fun. It was simple to get into. I think it was two. We played two rounds. By the second one, I felt at ease. So
yeah, it's one of those games that's real easy to get into, but difficult and challenging to master.
Right.
But I love those kind of games where your second game, you feel super comfortable with it, but then you start finding the nuances to it, and you're like, oh, I could do this better, or this combo works a lot differently than I thought. Definitely check it out.
And as somebody who owns every set of Dominion, I'm all about enclosed box card games. But with that said, thank you, Quixotic. We'll be talking about them later on, but let us get ourselves into some things in reviews. Now, I know absolutely nothing about Evil.
That's okay. Cobra Kai is alphabetically first, so why don't you kick us off?
So I got lucky.
It's a pro move right there.
Years ago, I feel like I was early to the Cobra Kai train. A lot of people just got to it because they put them on Netflix. I have what was a YouTube Red subscription with my Google subscription, so I saw the show, but also years prior, and I don't know whether you've ever been around when I've talked about it, I have like a personal love of the Karate Kid story to the point okay where I wanted to create the Church of William Zabka, which...
I do remember this.
And the Church of William Zabka's rules are you are trained to be the best up to the point where the hero defeats you. Every hero needs a villain that is just as badass as them, but slightly worse. And the Church of Zabka, because William Zabka is the quintessential 80s gonna get beaten at the end guy, he's our spokesperson. So I've had a love for Karate Kid for that reason. So it was a sort of a no-brainer to jump in mid-first season on YouTube Red. And what I expected it to be sort of silly. You know, if you go look at the Sweep the Leg Johnny music video by No More Kings, like, I expected it to be that. Where it makes fun of Karate Kid, like maybe Brady Bunchy, but tell at least a story about like how he was wronged and how he's gonna get his comeback and it'd be a Rudy story or something for Johnny. And what it's done, what it did in the first season was a lot of that. It establishes the world. It establishes Johnny as not, he is the fallen bully from a bad background that makes you not go, oh, that forgives him being a bully. No, he admits he was a prick, and he's still a prick. But it makes him likable. At the same time, when it introduces Daniel, he is town hero made good. So he's Al Bundy if him being a football star meant something. But along the way, he's become sort of scummy in that he's like, everybody loves me. I'm Daniel LaRusso. But behind his back, everybody's like, oh, Jesus. He owns like car dealerships.
Yeah, like luxury car dealerships. Yeah. Not like he's not slinging Toyotas.
No. And so it goes on throughout the first season where Johnny's son reappears, and so Johnny starts a karate school, but then Daniel starts a karate school, so now it's Miyagi-Do versus Cobra Kai. And that was just season one, where they're introduced these whole families, and there's a Hetfield-McCoy aspect to it, there's a Romeo-Juliet aspect to it, where Johnny's son and Daniel's son, not Daniel's son, are into each other. And it grows from there. Now, that's season one, just establishing who all these people are, and Daniel and Johnny hate each other, and Cobra Kai is going to beat Miyagi-Do. But in the last episode, they introduce, like, no, we're not done with the lore building here. Because in the last episode of season one, they give you John Kreese, Dojo of Evil Cobra Kai. And the show just continues on. I don't want to get in too many of the spoilers, but every time I think, like, oh, they're done making, like, it's now its own show, it's not going to bring back the mythology of Karate Kid, it does it. I didn't think they were going to mention Karate Kid 3, which is a bad film. There's a whole episode about it. I didn't think they were going to bring any of the old Cobra Kai members back. They had a whole episode where all of the old Cobra Kai guys get back together, and they have, like, the most heartfelt episode of the show. Because one of the actors who played... Get Him a Body Bag.
Yeah.
He passed away from cancer last year, and he was in an episode that was about the old men now in beyond their prime, sort of dealing with being old men who used to be assholes. But in season three, they go to name of island.
Hawaii?
No. The Karate Kid 2 is in. Holy shit. It's where Miyagi's from. Oh my god.
Wow, you're bad at this.
My brain, like, shut the flip off. Oh, that's my IMDb window. That just appeared right all over our video. By the way, while I'm pulling this up, if you are unaware, we are currently...
Okinawa is being Okinawa. Said in chat.
Thank you. I don't know my Twitch shut up. They go to Okinawa and they reintroduce like all of the characters from Karate Kid 2. All of that's happening as like the overarch story of them building their dojos and all of the drama between them. There's a lot of interplay between like, oh, Billy doesn't like Tommy and Tommy's dating Tori and Tori tripped Cecil and Cecil punched Mikey with the gimpy leg. So there's a lot of that soap opera teenage drama, but it's done in really well. I would say it's almost Degrassi level, but slicker. It's more grown up. The show was written by the same guy who did the American Pie movies and the Harold and Kumar movies, John Hurwitz and Hayden Slosberg. I don't know how. And it was American Pie came out in like 1998 or something. Harold and Kumar came out in like mid 2000s. And now Cobra Kai is late 2010, early 2010s, 20s. I don't know how they keep their finger sort of on what a kid, what a teenage show is and make it feel sort of lived in. They're excellent at it. I'm super in love with the show. I think the end of season two is probably one of my favorite musical sequences in television, with the exception of, say, maybe The Magicians. There's a whole musical sequence at the end that's done to Cruel Summer, which shoots back to Karate Kid Part 1, because that was the song when Daniel and Allie go on the date together. If you can think of a sequence in one of the movies, they've at least nodded to it. At the same time as, like, Johnny is the inept nerd who does, or rather the inept asshole who doesn't know what the internet is. And in the beginning seasons, he's all very like, Cobra Kai means no mercy. And then in the third season, because a bunch of shit happens and people are like backstabbing each other and stealing and causing debauch, you know, he has this sort of self moment of realization, like, you know what? That was Kreese's Cobra Kai. Johnny's Cobra Kai means sometimes you show mercy. Being a badass is hitting the baddest guy when he sees you coming. And it's such a different, like, you see this character growth. I'm in love with it. I can't speak highly about it enough. I hope right now Twitch, other than my Okinawa blunder, is speaking my praises. Like, agree. Yeah, preach it. You tell me why you haven't, what, you tapped out?
So, I actually, looking at the episode list, it was about a third of the way through episode two is as far as I made it. I liked where they were going with it. It still did have that kind of sweep the leg kind of feel where, hey, this is Johnny. He's down on his luck. He's not anywhere near, like, he peaked in Karate Kid 1.
Yep.
Like, that was his life peak. Everything from there on was downhill. And it definitely gave you that sense. The telling line from the song No More Kings, it was King of 1985. Yeah, that lets you know how long ago it fucking was. He is no longer anywhere near that peak anymore.
A point. I would say he peaked the year before Karate Kid. Like, that's how little the show is about him. Like, his yeah. moment was last year.
And then when they tow his piece of shit car that he's basically been sleeping in. You know, he's doing handyman jobs and shit, and they find where he towed his car to, and it's fucking Daniel LaRusso's car lot, and you realize how much of a prick Daniel is now. It was like, okay, cool, like, this I'm into. him wanting to kind of Johnny wanting to kind of get back into that feel when he had control and he was kind of on the top of the mountain. So I'm going to reopen the dojo and I'm going to do it my way now. That I was totally into. When we get to where his student is sitting down at the table in the lunchroom with all the other, you know, Island of Misfit toy students, and they look over and see the hot chick table.
Yeah.
And he gets up and it starts doing like the slow Baywatch walk with the music behind him. I was just like, nope. Like, it was one of those scenes that I'll argue that it was so well done that my embarrassment for what was about to happen to that kid was palpable.
Right.
So to save him from further soul-crushing embarrassment,
just cut it off.
I chose to avert my eyes and not watch what was about to happen. And I just, like, I haven't gone back because I was concerned that the show becomes much more of that, and that's not the kind of show I wanted to see. So I'm sure at some point, because you are far from the only voice in my ear telling me, no, but you have to watch this show. It's so good. So I'm sure that I will get back to it. But like I couldn't power through it like I normally do. Yes. Yes. Black in the Black says Rob had the big cringe. That's exactly what it was. Like, as soon as he stood up, I'm literally watching it going, no, stop. Pause, stop. I'm Forged in Fire. I'll go watch something else.
I'm going to tell you that I think no matter what, I was going to give the show a season just because of my love of the original source. But I 100% can see how in those first couple episodes, especially when they're trying to find their feet, they're really, you know, not even toe dipping. Like, they're to the waist of let's deep dive into the expected teenage movie. Whether that's just while they were trying to figure out their world or whether it was by design, I can't say. But I would say about 3/4 of the way through season one, they've established their players, and most certainly by the end of season two or mid season two, they know the direction they're going in, how they're getting there, and at the end, who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. For as much as it's a very Shades of Grey show.
For a show that I haven't watched more than an episode and a half of, I am going to say I won't even give them the negative of it felt like they were trying to find their feet. I think going into this type of a show, this show knew exactly where its feet were going to be and where it was going to go. It's just, I'll use the term unfortunate, but I don't mean it in necessarily a bad way, but it's the cost of doing business where they have to say, look, in order to get to letter F, we have to go through A, B, C, D, and E. And people may not find B, D, and C, you know, B, C, and D entertaining, but we kind of have to go through those to get to F because they're all involved in that.
Right.
So I think that's more of what it was. I just, the episode didn't drive me crazy about what they were doing in that episode, but I'm sure it was a necessary step to get to the next step, to get to the next step, to establish everything they needed to, so you know who all the players are and what their initial motivations are, so now we can get into the real meat of stuff and get it going.
What I am looking forward to going forward, I've not finished season 3, although I know 99% of the beats. I'm trying to finish Blacklist before I dive into the rest of Cobra Kai. I know. I know. There will be an episode of the Blacklist coming, because you've been begging me to do the Blacklist for a while. I'm finally now, you know, 5 seasons in. Now I need to talk about it. But
yeah.
The fact that the end of each season establishes like a different way the lines are drawn I think that's the easiest way to say that. It, you know, makes me really think that the show probably only has another season, maybe two. Because, and I hope that's where it ends, because they're telling a complete story. From beginning to end, there's something they're moving towards, and I can't wait to see what it is. Even rewatching a couple clips and episodes for this, like, there's references to other parts of the movies and the shows that, like, I didn't catch on first watching. There's a sequence in series two where two of the girls are fighting, which, by the way, super, you know, go on them for making the show not just like Boys Club versus Boys Club. There's some young women in there that are kicking ass. That but there's a sequence that is literally the Allie and Johnny at the restaurant or the dance scene where Daniel gets kicked into a table and there's food and spaghetti and shit all over him. That sequence plays out exactly in season two at like a country club. So if you are a fan of Karate Kid, if you know all of the Karate Kid movies, except for the one with the dog, because I don't think that's canonical. They've yet to mention Girl Karate Kid. But they did mention Karate Kid 3, which is saying something, because that movie is abysmal and wonderful.
Abysmal and wonderful. You've just described our podcast.
Just a brief Karate Kid 3 interjection, then we'll move on to Evil. Karate Kid 3 is about a man who looks 30, who was apparently saved in Vietnam by a man who looks 60. The man who is 30 is now a business tycoon, a multi-billionaire business tycoon who has like million sports cars, who because the man who saved his life wants to get revenge on a random 25-year-old kid who embarrassed him, the man stops being a billionaire and goes to torture a child for 2 hours, for 2 hours of movie. A millionaire stops, just leaves his empire to go embarrass a guy, a kid, a 20-something-year-old in a karate tournament. It's amazing. Wah.
Sounds fantastic.
Karate Kid 3.
And yet.
Is a treat.
Terrible.
See? Highly recommend it. But so that's my review of Karate Kid. I'm sorry, Cobra Kai. I had the soundtrack on most of the summer after I'd watched the second season. I'm looking forward to doing the same for the third. To you, tell me about this evil.
So I knew nothing about this TV show before I started watching it on Netflix. Only like the Netflix blurb that was on there. I didn't realize that this was a CBS series that Netflix kind of picked up to put through their streaming service. But it feels like a secular X-Files kind of thing.
Like prophecy secular?
Well, religious.
Right.
More just, you know, it wasn't always like X-Files was kind of like aliens and supernatural and weirdness and telekinesis and stuff. This is more Mike Coulter, who everybody will know from Luke Cage, plays David Acosta, who is a former journalist who is studying to be a Catholic priest and who works as what's called an assessor. His job is the church will send him out to investigate events and either confirm that they are actual miracles or demons or possessions or stuff like that, or determine that it is of some other origin. In order to have a full complement of skills at his disposal, they bring on board Dr. Kristen Bouchard, who's played by Katia Herbers, who is a former forensic psychologist. So they rope her into the group so she can give her opinion on, you know, David might say, you're saying this is possession? And she could say, well, you know, it could be, you know, post-traumatic stress, multiple personality disorder kind of thing too. It has that same kind of, so they kind of tackle it from two different angles. The third member of their group is Ben Shakir, played by Asif Mandvi, who is the technical expert. So he's the type of guy who will be like, oh, they're hearing voices. Well, it could be psychosomatic. It could be, you know, multiple personality. It could be possession. And he'd be like, or somebody could have bugged their iPhone. Let me take a look at it and see if.
Very good.
So he's, you know, he's the camera technical computer guy. It is really, really well done. So the way they play off of each other is amazing because the Venn diagram of their skills barely overlap, and it just overlaps on like this show and what they're trying to do. You know, in no other universe would these three people hang out with each other or work with each other except for what they're trying to do in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Emerson is also in it. You may know Michael Emerson from Lost as the leader of the Others.
Thank you. I knew the name sounds familiar.
He plays, excuse me, he plays Dr. Leland Townsend, who is an expert on the occult. And there's something weird with him.
What?
Because...
Ben Linus.
Yeah, I know. Go on. He basically screws Kristen Bouchard out of her job by coming in a trial case that she is called in to be the expert on as the opposition expert, and basically like shoots down all of her theories, proves all of her stuff wrong to the point where the prosecution can't use her testimony anymore because it's been so thoroughly just, you know, destroyed and run through.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to confront him and she tries to record their conversation on her phone. And as soon as they start talking, she thinks she's got everything. She gets home and she plays it back. And as soon as he starts talking, he's like, well, Dr. Bouchard. And like nothing that he says gets recorded. So they're okay. Like, well, how does that happen? So, and he shows up like in weird places. It does like the whole kind of Dracula practical effects where you'll be in David Acosta's room and he'll be reading scripture and the camera will start kind of panning over his left shoulder and it'll pan over his right shoulder and pan back and there's Michael Emerson standing where he wasn't standing before kind of thing. So there's definitely something weird supernaturalist kind of going on with him.
Just a real question. Is the show fully episodic or is it sequentially moving forward at all times? Is it just like, is it the mix of both where it's, yes, today we're
it's
going
It's definitely a mix of both.
Yeah, okay. That's what
and
I expected.
It feels as you get deeper into season one that what you think was, hey, here's an episode 3 plot with an overarching theme that's carried on, you start to realize that, holy shit, that plot that we thought was a plot of the week with an underlying theme, no, that plot of the week ties into the whole underlying theme as well. Like, okay. They really start to put all the loose ends together towards the end of the first season while creating completely new and different threads. Like, it is... It's really good, and it can be a little confusing because some of the stuff feels Nightmare on Elm Street-ish. And I say that because Kristen Bouchard has night terrors. So she finds herself being taunted, tormented by this kind of demon in her sleep. And the demon starts talking about stuff that she did that day. So she's like, and then she wakes up and she's like, what the fuck? So she comes up with this little trick where she realizes that when you're dreaming, you can't read. So she writes this poster board that basically says, you're awake. And she tapes it to the ceiling over her bed. The next time this thing shows up, she looks up at the poster and it looks like all gibberish. So now she knows this is all a dream. I'm in control. I can do what I want. This thing doesn't have any power over me, kind of thing.
That's super smart. So, right, I dig that.
You know, like, she'll kick its ass and she'll wake up and then she'll look up and she'll read it and then she'll go to the bathroom to get a drink of water and she opens the door and the thing is standing there, kind of thing. So it kind of blurs the lines between asleep, awake, conscious, not conscious. It's really weird and it can be a little confusing until you kind of get a grasp of the beats that the show has and how they give their little tells as to what part of the conscious world we're in or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it is amazing. It's a 10 episode first season and I blew through this first season in 2 days. I was just amazingly, no, I'm sorry, 13 episodes. 2 days I blew through. It's so good. And there are so many other people from other good shows that I've seen. For example, Boris MacGyver is in it as the Monsignor, who is David Acosta's boss. He was in Lincoln. He was in House of Cards. He was in The Wire. If you saw House of Cards, he was the newspaper editor.
Gotcha.
Noah Robbins is in it, who's been in a bunch of stuff. Kristen Connolly's in it.
Kurt Fuller. I see that.
Renee Goldsberry as Renee Harris. She got her start playing. She created the originating in the role of Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton. So there are big name. This show has some weight. Just to comment on what Blacker Than Black Thomas Finney said, Emerson is so good. I have not seen anything that Michael Emerson is in that is bad. Person of Interest, he's good in, and it's kind of a shock because he's not the jerk. You know, he's not the guy you're supposed to hate. Dr. Leland Townsend is like a supernatural Ben Linus. Like, the minute you see him, you're like, oh, fuck this guy. And you're like, well, maybe I shouldn't hate. Nope. No, I'm supposed to hate him. Yep. This is a guy I'm not supposed to like.
Okay, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
And it's just because I'm in to give the show a shot. There's a bunch of things,
absolutely,
including one thing that you didn't mention that as I'm scrolling through the wiki I saw and I'm like, oh damn it! Now I'm gonna have to watch it, which I'll get to in a second. But my question for you is,
mm-hmm,
who hired all of them? I know it's that it was David who hired them. Who put David in that job to go find all this stuff? Like, who's the corporation? Who's the money?
So what happens is the first episode, Bouchard is the forensic psychologist in a murder trial.
Okay.
And she is there to talk to this guy, Orson LaRue, who is claiming to be demonically possessed.
As you do.
She's in there to interview him and prove that this is not the case. As she's leaving, we see David Acosta standing out in the hallway. So she walks past him, and as she's talking to the other prison guards and stuff, she's like, oh, well, can you pass this to his lawyer? And they're like, well, his lawyer's not here. And she's like, I just passed him in the hallway. And they're like, well, he's not his lawyer. So she doubles back and confronts Acosta afterwards. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are you his lawyer? He's like, no, I'm from the church. We're here to see if it's actually demonic possession. So that's kind of how they meet. They meet through happenstance of dealing with this same guy. And he gets, when I say he, I'm sorry, David Acosta gets put on another assessment that he knows going in, we're going to need more people on this. So he tells the Monsignor, hey, look, we ran into this woman who was doing this other thing. I think she would be a great asset to the team.
So it's the
reason she takes it is because Emerson's character has now just fucked her out of covering this guy. So she's kind of out of a job. So when they approach her, she's like, so you try to validate possessions and miracles, and David Acosta's like, yeah.
Okay.
So, and you want to pay me how much? Sure. I don't have a job right now. I'm in. So it'll be different. Why not?
That's what I think is interesting, is that it's the church that's like, at its heart, the church is the one that's sending them off on their X-Files cases.
Yes. Yes. And some of them,
that's,
I mean, some of them are really cool. Some of it's like, hey, there's this chick who's doing premonitions and prophecy. And they're like, wow, okay. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that, like, stage magicians can do that kind of shit. So you want us to go and find out if she's, you want us to go out and validate that she's real. And the church is like, we want you to go and prove that she's not.
Mm, okay.
Okay, that sounded a little, like, concerning. Why was it phrased that way? And then, like, he'll pull out this book from the Vatican that nobody's seen in 500 years. And he's like, because 10 of her last 11 predictions were written 4,000 years ago in this book that nobody's ever seen. So how the fuck would she know this? And we, as the church, cannot have somebody with that kind of knowledge actually out and about. So prove that she's not real. I don't care how you do it, kind of thing. So it almost becomes like, you know, running blocker for the church, in some cases, for some things that they're trying to do. But it's once they go through and start tying everything together and you realize that all of these quote unquote episodic episodes were not just episodic, but were all just little dots in a picture that we were too close to see. And until we pulled the camera back, did we realize that there were pixels in a much bigger thing? It was fucking amazing. Like, I think would definitely like this show. And if you, I will say this, if you are willing to give this show a shot, I am willing to go back in and start rewatching Cobra Kai.
You know, that might build us to another episode in the future of like, all right, now we did watch the other one's show. Now, yeah, I'll review Evil and you review. The thing I was going to say that is, it's annoying that this is the thing I saw and I'm like, I'm going to have to watch. Looking at their episode list,
mm-hmm.
every episode has a number in it. Like, I'm going to run through the episode titles really quickly just so people understand who are listening. Episode 1 is Genesis 1, and then 177 minutes, 3 stars. Rose 390, October 31st, Let X Equal 9, Vatican 3, Two Fathers, and it goes on from there. You know what, there's only a couple left. Exorcism Part 2 and 7 Swans of Singing, Room 320, okay, there's like 20, never mind. The fact that each one of these episodes has a number in it says to me, one, there's probably a code somewhere in this show. And I am nothing if not somebody trying to find codes in television shows, whether they exist or not. And two, if they're thinking about their episodes in such a way as to give them some sort of semblance of patterning like that, that leads me to believe they know about their bigger picture. It's not just the sandwich incident, chick with head on fire, the time we went to the bar, the one with the guys. These episode names are sort of formulated. And that builds something in my head.
In an interview on TVLine.com in January of 2020, when asked to elaborate on the title-based mystery, Robert King, who's one of the writers and producers of the show, told TV Line on Sunday at the Television Critics Association Winter Press Tour, there is something in the finale that is going to bring together all of the puzzle pieces and the titles in some way that is to be solved. But look, if you don't want to be involved with that, then you're not going to be bothered by it. But if you want to be involved with that, there will be something. And hopefully people will be happy that there's something.
There's an ARG. Damn it. Damn it.
Listen, man, the ARG was some of the best stuff that happened in the mid-seasons of that show.
I know. I love ARG.
Always comes back to Lost.
I know.
Always comes back
to Lost. Well, and Midwestern.
I know more about the mythology of that show from the fucking ARGs than I do from the show
itself.
That's
true. Do you know how many websites I went circulating trying to find those stupid clips, those single frames for the videos?
Yes.
But Midwestern Stream Queen on our Twitch mentioned this sounds like Gravity Falls. Are you familiar with the ARG from Gravity Falls?
I am not.
Short version of a much longer story. They put out, I don't remember how it started. It probably started with tweets or a picture. Needless to say, the creator of the show after, again, let me repeat, the show had been canceled by then. It had its two seasons. It was done. And the creator of the show sent the fans, between his tweets and some pictures and a book they published and produced that has like blacklight secrets in it, he sent them on a scavenger hunt around the flipping world to end up finding a statue in the middle of the Washington State woods of a statue of one of the characters that was buried that's related to the last episode of the show. So you're looking for where all of this took place. Here's your final resting place. It's fucking amazing. So the fact that this show has some sort of semblance of ARG connected to it and like a secret lying beneath the surface, and it hurts, but I think I must watch it tomorrow.
Fair enough.
I'm still upset Alias isn't on anymore. Like, so what about you fine folks out there? Did you watch Cobra Kai? Have you watched Evil? What's your favorite ARG? Let us know. You can do it by going to somethingcast.com. And we have all of the links to all of the wonderful places where we are wonderful. You may have noticed that there are no more comments beneath each of the posts. You probably didn't know they were there in the first place. That's why they're not.
So they didn't know that until you brought up the fact that they're not there anymore.
But maybe somebody will tweet you, I really like the comments. I left a comment on episode 4. Now you should tweet all of these wonderful things too at SDSDcast or on our Facebook. Leave comments underneath this show. And please, we've had people who like have sent us private messages to let us know about what we talked about and how we're wrong. Fucking tell us publicly. We will fight you.
Yeah.
For fun.
Yeah, none of this. I don't want to air this dirty laundry in public. No, screw that. Air the dirty laundry in public. We want public discourse. The reason we took the comments off the website was because hardly anybody was using the comments on the website. We were getting more tweets and we were getting more Facebook comments. So tweet us at STSTcast, hit us on the Facebook, let us know what you thought of this episode that you are listening to right now, and people in the chat who are listening to this now a week before it actually airs, you get a jump shot on that. But also check out our episode that dropped earlier today, which was about books that got turned into bad movies. Let us know what you thought about that. Go over and check out quixoticgames.com and get involved in the Kickstarter and check out the other awesome games that they have on that. That's pretty much all I've got for right now.
Yeah, so I think just to go back to the ARG thing very briefly, I just realized I look forward and I'm going to show this on camera because this is an audio medium. Like, I'm not kidding about this ARG universe thing. This is Trip 1907, an interactive escape book game that I've been playing since Christmas. I immerse myself into this bullshit. So if you know any awesome things, let me know.
If you, the listener, want to get into some really awesome ARG stuff, we may have to go to our website and take a look and see, because we did an ARG that was part of one of our radio dramas. When we did our Lovecraftian radio drama, there was a whole ARG that was involved right in the very beginning of that. So we're going to have to make sure that that's actually posted on the website. And if it's not, we're going to have to get that posted up there. But all of those links and sites and things that we created for our own ARG, they're still active. They're still floating around out there in the ether. So, you're going to have to go check that out. Guys in the chat, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody who came in and showed us some love and gave us some comments and followed along in the Twitch chat. Definitely make sure to hit that follow button and help us grow our Twitch community. That being said, to help continue to grow our Twitch community, there is this thing in the Twitch world called raids, where we bring our audience and we drop them off in another Twitch streamer's audience to help kind of show the love for what they do. So right now there is a Twitch streamer that I follow and watch called Celestial Zen, who plays some Dead by Daylight. She's doing a great job right now. We're going to go over and raid her channel. So stick around, watch her play some awesome video games where she hunts down unsuspecting survivors and murders them mercilessly. Give her a follow if you want. Definitely let her know where you came from. Say, hey, what's going on? Give us a follow as well. Other than that, I'm Podcast Rob.
And I'm James Hatton, and we thank you all for joining us. Before we go away, I just wanted to let you guys know we have a wonderful audience tonight. And if you guys want to see us more live, if you want to come and hang out and do episodes with us, you want to do all that, please let us know you'll keep coming back, and we'll up our showing. That's all we can do. But I got nothing else to say. So I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
And now we'll talk to you guys after. Bye.
Yep, here we go. We're going to go raid. Check us out.
Oh, my God. I've never done that.
Something, 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 something.
Okay, here we go.